This is Agriculture Today.
As we get into the end of March here, we will have USDA's quarterly stocks report, which is known for its market moving surprises on March 31, and planning intentions report.
Arlen Suderman is chief economist with StoneX.
That planning intentions report, of course, will be based on farmer surveys that were returned before we knew about the trade deal being delayed with China, before we knew much of anything of the Iran war, although it had just started when the surveys were really, the bulk of them were returned. So it will immediately be in question until the June survey, but it'll be the numbers that we have to operate off of.
Well, eyes are also on exports, and U.S. grain inspections improved with corn and soybeans leading movement as export demand stays active across major shipping channels. Corn inspections, according to USDA, 66.9 million bushels, up slightly from the previous week, running well ahead of year-ago levels. Soybean inspections, 40.5 million bushels, also higher week-to-week, still lower than last year's pace, but more than half of those shipments going to China. And they also took a notable share of sorghum, underscoring their ongoing role in feed grain demand. And wheat inspections improved to 16.8 million bushels. Well, wholesale beef prices moving higher earlier than normal this year. It signals tighter supplies and strong demand across cattle markets. Choice box beef cutout moved above $400 per hundredweight, up roughly $50 since the start of the year. That's according to analysis from Josh Maples at Mississippi State. Select cutout also climbing sharply, reaching levels not seen since mid-2020. Spread between choice and select has remained narrow, indicating a limited premium for higher grade cattle so far this year. Now, beef prices typically build gradually early in the year before peaking ahead of summer demand. This year's move higher, happening sooner, reflects tighter cattle supplies, reduced beef production, and buyers may also be stepping in earlier to secure product ahead of an expected supply constraint later this spring. Now, strength in rib and loin primals have really driven much of the increase, both cuts trending higher since mid-January and supporting the broader cutout. Well, long-term borrowing costs are expected to stay elevated at the farm gate, keeping pressure on financing decisions tied to land, equipment, and expansion. Matt Erickson's with Terrain says inflation expectations, higher neutral interest rate, and elevated term premium preventing long-term treasury yields from falling much, even with the Federal Reserve expected to gradually ease short-term rates, long-term yields remaining stubbornly firm. Lower shipping costs, though, are improving the competitive position of U.S. wheat moving to Japan, even as export volumes show some softness. USDA data shows that total landed costs declined both quarter-to-quarter and year-over-year for shipments originating in Kansas and North Dakota, cost ranging from roughly $7 to $8.80 per bushel equivalent. Most of the decline, though, tied to lower farm values and some easing in transportation cost. It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Is the end close? That's the debate in the markets this morning.
Chief Economist with StoneX, Arlen Suderman.
President Trump posted on Truth Social that the United States and Iran had seen 2 days of very, quote, very good and productive conversations regarding a complete and total resolution of our hostilities in the Middle East, unquote. As a result, he stated that he had ordered the Department of War to postpone any and all military strikes against Iranian power plants and energy infrastructure for a 5-day period, subject to the success of the ongoing talks. Now, Iran media then released a statement that there had not been any direct or indirect contact with President Trump. I'm sorry, that would not happen with the president. It would be through his contacts. And that President Trump is trying to, quote, buy time, unquote, in the war. It went on to say that Trump withdrew from the power plant strikes after Iran's firm warning that it would hit Asian power facilities. But welcome to the fog of war when both sides use the available media seeking to impact the final result. Keep in mind that all parties involved in any war are operating on two fronts in today's era, the battleground front as well as the public opinion front. There's likely a mixture of truth and positioning to be found in most public comments made by officials. The challenge is to test what is said against what is observed. Now, the regime in Iran knows that it is overpowered militarily, but it still hangs on to its ability, hope that it can create fear while outlasting the American public's tolerance of war. It must sustain its power base in the event that it is able to survive so that it will still have an ability to carry out its objectives stealthily after this war is over. On the other hand, President Trump is aware of the public's distaste for war and inflated prices and its potential impact on the midterm elections. He wants to end the war sooner rather than later, but he doesn't want to his legacy to be that he failed to finish the job, leaving enough behind that Iran builds an even stronger threat to the United States for the future. As such, everything stated by both sides must be tested by the events that actually occur. Now, President Trump reportedly told Fox Business's Maria Bartiromo this morning that we could see a deal with Iran as soon as 5 days or less, and that the latest talks occurred last night. Now, it'd be foolish to set the expectations of 5 days if something significant isn't happening. That doesn't mean that we will see an end of it within 5 days, but that would seem to indicate, since he gave such a short deadline, surely all of our memories will last till the end of the week, that we should know something by the end of this week. What we do know is that this morning's developments opened the door to the possibility that we will soon have more certainty in the Middle East. Energy and fertilizer prices would not be expected to immediately return to pre-war levels. There's been too much infrastructure damage that's occurred to have that happen. But we would expect to see volatility ease from current levels with reduced upside risk from the unknown factors of the headlines. It would take some weeks for wells to be restarted. And of course, some infrastructure will need to be rebuilt. A worst case scenario would suggest that some infrastructure could take 2 to 3 years to rebuild, although we'd like to at least see some of that deficit made up by alternative production sources ramped up elsewhere to seek to fill the gap in the meantime, if that were the case. The bottom line is that the war will likely have a long tail, albeit a less volatile one. Nevertheless, energy and fertilizer supplies will likely be negatively impacted for a while.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Ag News now. Agriculture Today.
All the warning signs are there, yet we do nothing.
President for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, Maya McGinnis, in front of a Senate Finance Subcommittee.
With the exception of the Fiscal Responsibility Act last year, almost everything that we've done in the past decade and more has relied on more borrowing. Unoffset tax cuts, infrastructure bill, PACT, spending on seniors, which made Social Security insolvent even sooner. There are more and more things that we continue to choose to borrow for. It's going to cause a generational resentment, and younger people are going to be right to be angry about it. Politics don't help. Both parties spend a lot of time blaming each other. We know that all sorts of policies have contributed to this. About 37% of the increase in GDP since we had budget surpluses comes from tax cuts. About 33% comes from spending increases. About 28% comes from responses to recessions. Really importantly, three quarters of all those policies were bipartisan. Nobody likes to raise taxes. Nobody likes to cut spending. We need to do both of them. As bad as these numbers are, they could easily be worse. Just a few examples, I think, include if we don't replace the tariff revenue, if we extend the tax cuts and don't have them expire, as some of them are built into OBA, if we revert and include, if we bring back the ACA subsidies, just those three things alone, another $5 trillion. And there are so many more things that we could look at, an emergency supplemental, increases in defense spending, scaling back the Medicaid savings, unforeseen emergencies, higher interest rates, and the list goes on and on of things that we could continue to borrow more for. So what do we do? Thank you again for holding the hearing. We just have to talk about it, and I was encouraged by the opening remarks, where there's clearly such an overlap of understanding of the issue. And I think we all understand that the politics of this is really hard, and it's quite thankless. We know the effort's going to have to be bipartisan. We've put forth a couple of ideas to kind of try to get the discussion going. The first is there really should be an agreement that there will be no new borrowing. We're already going to borrow $24 trillion over the next 10 years under CBO's estimates. We could agree that any new policies are offset. We believe that we should adopt a fiscal target, again, of a minimum of 3%, which is something that Secretary Bessent has put out there and many others have embraced as a target that's enough to reassure financial markets, but not so much as to be impractical. Whenever we adopt really aggressive targets like, oh, we're going to balance the budget, we fall short right away and we tend to give up. And I should point out that getting to 3% of GDP would require $10 trillion in savings. Given that $1.5 trillion in savings is the most we've had in over a decade, this would be in itself an incredibly heavy lift. Other options we are pushing are something called super paygo, where every time there's a dollar in tax cuts or new spending, we'd actually offset it by 2-for-1 so that we could start to have a down payment on deficit reduction. Fixing Social Security immediately, and putting forth a fiscal commission, bipartisan fiscal commission, which I'm so pleased was introduced yesterday in the Senate by a broad bipartisan group of senators. That would bring some political coverage of the issue. Realistically, I fear we're not going to get this done, or at least I think there's a real risk we aren't going to get this done without an emergency or a crisis. I've got to emphasize that seems absurd to me that a country as strong with us as we are with so much warning would let a crisis push us to act, but I fear that's going to happen. We have just released a break glass plan. So in case of emergency, there would be a plan that would be on the shelf that lawmakers would embrace that would first make sure any stimulus is really targeted and only what's necessary, no Christmas tree stimulus. Second, that it would be fully offset using super paygo, so $2 for $1. Third, we'd have some policies that we would phase in that would automatically put us on a better trajectory. And finally, we would include a fiscal commission.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This is Agriculture Today.
Yeah, I tell you what, I was really excited to get it passed, especially with 7 Democrats also supporting it, so it's very bipartisan.
Brendy Feenstra's a representative from Iowa, member of the House Ag Committee and House Ways and Means Committee, on passing a farm bill.
This gives us the opportunity to make sure that we get it off the House floor and we get it over to the Senate. I mean, this is such an important bill when it comes to conservation, when it comes to research, when it comes to a lot of trade. And there's a lot of trade issues in this bill. When it comes to the Fridge Act, opening up the export market in Africa for things that need refrigeration, whether it be cattle, hogs, dairy, all these things. And this, again, we want more markets, and this is what it does, and that's what this farm bill does. So I'm very bullish on where we are in this farm bill. And now with President Trump saying, hey, we got to get this farm bill passed really quickly so the administration is behind it. So let's hang on, and hopefully we can get this thing out of the House in the next several weeks.
The 2018 Farm Bill took 2 votes, and 30 Republicans were against it. So how does this move forward?
That's what we're working on right now. I mean, we are working on building that coalition with Democrats and Republicans. Obviously, we got to get it to pass, and we're going to make sure that we have the votes before it passes. Obviously, President Trump said he'll sign it once we get it passed. But we're now trying to have everybody understand what's in this. I mean, it's a spending neutral bill, and really at this point, we got to help out the American farmers. I mean, this is so critical that we get this passed. There's a lot of key components in here that will really help, especially when it comes to opening more markets, more trade ideas in here. Also, the safety for our food. There's a lot of different nutrition issues when it comes to safety. And then also the Farmland Act, protecting the farmland in America and Iowa that our foreign adversaries aren't buying it. So, you know what? I think we're going to get bipartisan support on the House floor to get it passed. We'll probably get 15 to 25 Democrats, and that will be enough to get it over to the Senate. And the Senate already said that, boy, if they can get a very big bipartisan bill passed, then they'll have to take it up in the Senate and get it to the governor or get it to Trump's desk.
Then there's the issue of year-round E15. In the House.
We're already seeing one state after another passing it, so it really creates this mixed fabric in our country. That's why it's so important that we do it across all states. And again, we're working as a council. I'm chair of the E15 council, meaning we put this council together about a month ago to say, hey, we are going to get a vote on this, and leadership has said that we will get a vote. So we're putting this together, working with small, medium-sized, and large refiners, getting them all on board, also with all the different biofuel components to make sure that they're on board. And we've got a bill very close to ready to go to see the light. And then it's just a matter of whipping votes and getting it over the finish line.
And what's happening at the White House?
Trump is getting a bunch of farmers and congressional members together to talk about this is National Ag Day, National Ag Week, to talk about what we can do to lower fertilizer costs. This is such a big deal right now, is getting those lower fertilizer costs. And then also making sure that we open trade markets. Again, we don't want checks. We want more trade markets, and that's what we want to talk about. Then also making sure that we continue to grow the American farm production in different facets. And obviously that farm bill is going to be a critical part of that.
It's Agriculture Today.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The most likely path for U.S. interest rates in 2026 is a slow, deliberate easing of short-term rates.
Matt Erickson is an economist with Terrain.
While long-term rates remain relatively sticky and resistant to a sharp decline. Although inflation has eased considerably since its 2022 peak, it has proven stubborn at around 3%, reflecting the continued convergence of wage growth and prices. At the same time, real economic activity remains resilient. Policy uncertainty, from tariffs to fiscal deficits, adds another layer of complexity, keeping term premiums elevated for longer dated securities. As the Federal Reserve slowly lowers interest rates, the difference between short and long-term rates is increasing. For producers, falling short-term rates may lower the cost of seasonal operating loans for inputs like seed and fertilizer, but persistently high long-term rates keep borrowing costs elevated for assets like land and equipment. This dynamic can also impact refinancing opportunities and can also weigh on farmland values and expansion plans. Since reaching a recent high of 5.5% in July of 2023, the Federal Reserve has cut its short-term policy rate by 1.75 percentage points to a new range of 3.5% to 3.75%. However, over the same period, the 10-year U.S. Treasury has increased about 0.2%. So far, the Fed has justified cuts to the short-term policy rate due to a slight softening in the labor market and a desire to slow inflation toward the central bank's stated goal of 2%. The labor market weakened slightly throughout 2025, reaching a high in the unemployment rate of 4.5% in November. Since November, there have been signs of stabilization in unemployment claims and modest job growth. As a result, the unemployment rate declined slightly to start 2026. At this point, it is best to think of the labor market as rate neutral, neither arguing for aggressive rate cuts nor changing the pace of gradual cuts. Inflation has remained stickier. For example, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Index has accelerated since mid-2025 after a prolonged period of declines. The Consumer Price Index has been more favorable, indicating modest declines over the past 12 months, though still above the Fed's 2% goal. The stickiness of inflation also argues for a cautious easing of short-term policy rates. Therefore, the most likely scenario is a gradual, slow easing of the short-term policy rate to about 3% by the end of 2026, which would be near the average rate from 1990 through 2019. For farmers, this implies modest savings on short-term and variable rate loans. 10-year Treasury yields, a good benchmark for long-term rates at the farm gate, remain elevated because the current macroeconomic backdrop does not justify a return to the ultra-low rate environment that followed the 2008 financial crisis. From January 2008 through 2019, the 10-year Treasury averaged just 2.58%, or about 1.6% lower than current rates. I believe that the macroeconomic backdrop will prevent the 10-year Treasury from declining to these low rates for three reasons. First, continued income growth. Second, higher expectations for future inflation and rate levels. And third, U.S. government debt measures.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
In fact, our fast rising national debt does and can have an effect on everyone's lives.
Minnesota Senator Tina Smith at a recent Senate Finance Subcommittee hearing on the nation's debt.
It can drive up inflation and raise costs for families. It can stifle economic opportunity and make it harder to buy a home or start a business. And it can make it harder for the federal government to do the work that it ought to be doing. If you consider this as an example, CBO's outlook projects that interest, not Social Security or Medicare, is our fastest growing expense. Net interest costs are expected to double to more than $2 trillion over the next decade. So that is a lot of money leaving the Treasury with no meaningful improvement to people's lives. And I think as Chair Johnson and I would agree, we didn't end up here by chance. We got here because of the policy choices that we have made, that Congress has made, the executive branch has made. It seems to me that deficit spending in times of a crisis like World War II or the Great Recession or even the COVID-19 pandemic, that makes sense. And deficit spending may even make some economic sense when interest rates are at or near zero. But it does not make sense in the current environment, especially with the current environment of high interest rates. I also think it's important to be clear that deficits aren't caused just by spending that's too high. They are just as contingent on the revenue side of the ledger. And this is where, in my view, we have made some of our costliest policy choices. In the last two decades, Congress has reduced revenue by enacting big tax cuts that we simply can't afford. The latest installment in that series, the One Big Beautiful Bill, is now expected to add $4.7 trillion to our national debt, with most of that benefit going, I would argue, to the wealthiest folks and the biggest corporations. And in my mind, that's just irresponsible. I want to note, though, that as you say, this reluctance to think about the revenue side of the equation as well as the spending side of the equation, this is, again, not a partisan thing. And this is something that we all have to grapple with. In contrast, spending on discretionary programs is actually projected to decline in CBO's latest outlook. But this is not to say that spending doesn't deserve scrutiny as we try to solve this problem. Every dollar that we collect from American taxpayers should be put to good use. And Congress must be willing to cut and reform when it is not. Too often, both Congress and the executive branch fall back on defending the status quo rather than doing the hard work of evaluating what needs to be changed or what old ideas aren't working anymore. And I would be the first to say that not every federal program is working the way that it should. And when we can save money, we should, of course, do that. We have to figure out ways of doing that better. I think we also need to acknowledge another big issue that is affecting our financial and situation right now, and that is the war in Iran, which is reportedly costing us $1 billion a day or more. And as we think about that spending in the context of the Pentagon having never passed an audit to fully account for its $1 trillion budget. At the same time, we're being told that Congress is unable to afford health care for Americans. So it's no wonder to me that people are frustrated with Washington. And what do we do about this? Well, if we can agree that we're hurtling towards a financial crisis and that we need to then take the next step and figure out how to talk productively about solutions, this includes reevaluating the policy choices that we've made and fixing the things that aren't working. There is far too much at stake for us to remain sort of stubbornly entrenched in our respective corners on this crucial issue for the long-term health and vitality of our country. And I hope that we can talk about the path ahead to get federal spending and revenue back in balance so that we can avert this looming crisis.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.